This is Movers and Shakers, where we interview the upcoming generation of Make It Happen multifamily investors to share their story.
Welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I'm joined by my co-host, Joshua Ryan Rusin, the community director of Jake and Gino. Josh, how are you doing today, bro?
Gino, doing well, man. I'm excited that the days are getting longer. Events are in full swing. Students are crushing deals. Just a lot of momentum on all fronts, man. What's going on in your world?
Do you recognize the shirt, Josh?
I do, man. That's the Roan dress shirt.
Secret Santa, bro. I finally got a great Secret Santa present. So I'm doing really good. I love these two guests that we have on today. It really, to me, it embodies the Jake and Gino community. You know, family couple. They're really crushing it with what they're doing before they even join the community. And they're just looking for personal development and first personal growth and looking to invest in another asset class. So take it away, Josh.
All right. Today's guests are Jonathan and Rachel Beasley. Jonathan has over 16 years of full-time real estate sales experience, and Rachel has a passion for people, her family, and real estate. Together, they have helped over 1,000 people sell, own, or build a home. Wow. In 2022, Jonathan turned his full-time focus to investing, particularly building out their personal portfolio. They focus primarily on value-add multifamily properties and currently own 33 doors with another 36 doors in escrow. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Jonathan and Rachel.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having us, man. It's cool to be here. And you guys are two of my favorite people on the planet. So to get to hang out with my best friend and two people that I just look up to so much and talk about my favorite subject, real estate, this is a good time, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Speaking of that, Jonathan, let's dive into your story, man. Let's kind of give you your background, how you two met, why real estate, some of the other businesses you've done. Just bring us up to speed.
Yeah, for sure. I'll hop in and you fill in details that I might miss. So we met in Bible college, believe it or not. We've always kind of felt a pretty significant pull to make an impact on their lives. And that really hasn't changed even as we focused on real estate. Money really for us is just a means of impact. But yeah, we met in Bible college the first year, actually. As a first year in this Bible college program, you're not even allowed to talk to the opposite sex. So I actually she was a second year, I was a first year. So obviously she's older. She was robbing the cradle. But I kind of got to observe her for a year without like engaging her really at a relational level in a very stressful environment. So I got to learn a lot, and it's really cool to kind of see who someone is when that relational romantic part is not on the table. I feel like I got to really get to know her before we actually started dating. So kind of fast forward, we finished Bible college, obviously fell in love, got married pretty quickly. What was it like?
Six months dating.
Then we were engaged, and then 6 months. So within a year, we were married. And that was the way we wanted it, man. And it's kind of the way our parents did it too. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for everyone, but it worked for us, and we weren't going to wait much longer. So yeah, so we went into full-time ministry, probably spent the better part of our 20s in full-time ministry. I was a youth pastor and like a worship minister, and I kind of read books about business on the side. I always knew that I was interested in business and had a desire to make money. And so it was a bit of a weird time for me because you're committed to this thing where you don't make a lot of money. I think when we left the ministry, I was making $22,000, $23,000 a year. So we had our first kid, Emma. We got pregnant with Emma. And that was like reality check number one, that this is going to be really hard to build a family in full-time ministry. And at that point, Rachel actually left. She was working to be a stay-at-home mom. So we went from two incomes to one income. That income was 22 grand. 13 months later, we have our second kid, our son, William. And at that point, I started just realizing that this is not a way to, not a lot's going to happen financially for us if we keep down this path. So at that point, gosh, what is this like? 2006, actually. Yeah, I got my real estate license. I made the choice between law school. I was going to go to law school because everybody thinks, you know, that's the path to money, right? When you're raised in a poor family, that's what they tell you to do. Go get a degree, go get a job. And that's how you'll make your money. I decided against law school and went into real estate sales and slayed it my first year, like six figures. It was great. It was amazing. Then the market crashed and everything turned upside down. And I was literally looking for any job I could get. People forget how bad the Great Recession was, but I mean, there was so much fear on the streets, and like you have institutions with billions of dollars in market cap that are turning over and going bankrupt in a matter of months. So I took any job that I could get that would still allow me to sell houses during the day, because I still kind of had this dream of making money and somehow finding a way into entrepreneurship. So I, for about 2 years, I worked in a freezer throwing boxes around at a food company called Cisco and tried to sell houses during the day. So needless to say, my entry into entrepreneurship has not come without a price. And a lot of it really just boils down to not having had an education. I mean, the best education I had was reading like Rich Dad and Poor Dad and sort of that series of entrepreneurial mind changing books over a stretch of years. But like my parents and like no one in my family has ever been involved with business or investment. It took me years just to kind of break off a lot of the poverty tendencies and mentalities that had been, you know, beat into my head over the years. So 2010, I quit that third shift job and come back into real estate full time, guns blazing, absolutely committed to doing whatever it takes to succeed at this. And from there, sort of never looked back. So that was 12 years ago, I guess, 2012. What happened for us from there on was a lot of lifestyle creep. So we started making pretty good money, you know, six figures year over year, but we weren't keeping any of it. We were spending it like we wanted to spend it. You know, our kids go to private school. We drive nice vehicles. We built a nice home. So I'm working like a dog and we're still not really putting any money away. So, and this is significant because it took me from 2010 to 2015, essentially to squirrel away about 50 grand. To buy my first investment. So, and this part of the story is actually really interesting. And actually, I'll loop this back around to the Jake and Gino community because of the power of proximity and the power of momentum. But so finally, I squirreled away, you know, $50,000. We bought a short sale, a single family. It was 2016, actually. So 6 years ago, 2016, we buy our first single family, hit a home run. Bought it for 45 grand. I borrowed the money for repair, for fixing the property up. I think it was another 25 grand. So I'm in this single family, like 70 G's, and it appraises out of the bat for like 150. So like home run of a deal. And I had spent a lot of time saving and sort of learning the market to get ready for that one deal. So fast forward, you know, over the next 5 years, I learned about Burr strategy. I devour every Bigger Pockets and every real estate podcast I can get my hands on.
Every single one of them.
Driving the family mad, I'm sure. If we weren't hanging out, I was probably up in my room looking at podcasts, reading books. So fast forward over the next 5 years, I connect with a private lender. We start doing a little bit of flipping, doing a lot of burring. And I take that first 50 grand to 2020. I think at the end of 2020, I paid for a bunch of appraisals. And I had taken that 50 to about 700,000 in equity over a 5 year stretch. And then since 2020, just in the one apartment deal and small multifamilies I've done since then, I think this month or in the next month or so, once we finish a reposition, we're going to be at 2 million in equity. So like for me, right, it's crazy to think how hard those first 15 years were, you know? So it's like 15 years for 50 grand. The next 5 years, you're at 700. And then within like 24 months, you're at 2 million. And so like, it's that whole hockey stick metaphor that they use. We're finally just getting to that point where the hockey stick is starting to point upward. And I got to tell you, it's relieving and it's beautiful. And
sleeps better at night.
I am starting to sleep better at night. But the reality is, man, the game changer for me was joining the program, because wow, there's something so potent about success by association. Like when you're sitting at a table with guys that are buying 80 unit, 100 unit, 200 unit deals, it's really hard to brag about the 3 unit that you're renovating, you know, because the expectations are just higher, you know? So anyway, that was a mouthful. I'll throw it back to one of you guys.
No, you know, I really wanted something that really stuck out to me is it took you 20 years to get into multifamily. And I want you both to answer it. What took you so long to join Jake and Gino? What took you so long into your own mindset of getting into even a 3 unit or a 5 unit? What took you so long?
Yeah, honestly, not realizing what powerful levers exist in apartment investing. So a couple of years ago, we had a really good year flipping in 2018. And I flipped 5 houses. I think we made maybe $150,000, $160,000 as a side hustle. And I gave half of it back at the end of the year and didn't realize I was going to have to give it back. Mm. We had already spent the money on rental property. So I didn't hold anything back for taxes. Then I had to scramble to figure out how to pay that tax bill. So I had no idea the power of apartment investing. But I guess if we take it a deeper level, fear of making the numbers bigger, not having the mentors and the resources that could help me walk through it. Cause this was like a total on our own type of journey, Gino. This was like everything that, again, like I don't have one friend outside the community that invests in apartments. And I don't have one family member that has really any significant interest in business at all. So when you're on an island, it's really scary to start trying to like jump out into bigger stuff because you just don't know if you have the tools.
Rachel, what is your assessment of your thoughts?
Well, man, Jonathan has always been a hustler and a go-getter for sure. Mm-hmm. He always figures out a way to make it happen, as we say. Mm-hmm. We've invested a ton of money over the years in coaching. And I have to say, and when I say a ton, I mean, what, how many years have we been in any type of coaching program? Like
12 years, yeah.
From life coaching together to programs. The Jake and Gino group has been the best group we have invested in, for sure. Like, hands down, the community is amazing. And I think Jonathan hits it. Fear is probably the number one thing that held us back from taking that next step. Because we got burned a few times. So you just don't know until you dive in. But
specifically on coaching programs?
Specifically on coaching programs. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had a couple bad experiences where, you know, somebody pitches a really good thing and then you get their cell phone number and it's just, you know, it's just not what you stroke a check for, you know.
But remember, we were just talking off camera that reasoning, that's not going to happen in every situation. I'm glad that they didn't hold you back because that could have held a lot of people back. We're going to have good meals at restaurants. We're going to have bad meals at restaurants. Does it mean if you have a bad meal at a restaurant, you don't go to a restaurant ever again? That's not the situation. Understand what happened. Understand why the food was bad. Understand why you didn't enjoy it and make the assessment on the next program or the next restaurant you go to. That's really important, everybody. But I want to mention and ask you one question because this is very difficult for the average American, myself included. I think they call it the Diderot effect. Jonathan, when you're starting to make money, all of a sudden you're making money, your lifestyle starts creeping up. You make more money.
Yes.
And that's everybody. And you expect it. You're making 50 grand a year. You could live on 50. All of a sudden you make 100. You need to buy a car. You need to get a couple more dresses. You need to go to the gym a little bit more. And then you make 200. How did you fight that off and say, time out? I have to really tamp back on the spending and really focus on investing my money for the future because you're saving to buy assets. That's the thing. What did you guys do to help you with that?
Yeah, I'll be honest, man. We didn't necessarily. And I think this is kind of like to each his own. So for us, I never loved the idea of buttoning down the budget. Like I always wanted to expand rather than contract. I don't recommend that for everyone because you've heard the expression, if you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough. So it's kind of like that. Like if you're going to commit yourself to constant expansion and playing offense financially, then you have to be willing to be hard-headed and stubborn and know your purpose and work hard and go through all of that. I mean, the reality is we still to this day don't have a budget and I don't know that we ever will. We're getting to the point where it's less of a concern now, which is beautiful. But to answer the question, we found a way to get started, but we were just committed to expanding. Like I read the Millionaire Next Door. There couldn't be a book that would like more unattract me to that way of thinking. Like, I'm not going to get my shoes redone. I'm not going to drive a jalopy. Like, that's not going to happen. I'm just going to find a way to get better and expand.
This is great. So let me really recap what you're saying real quick for everybody, because this is important. This works for Jonathan and for Rachel. They don't want to live in a scarcity mindset. Some of us out there may want to say, well, we're not going to have the Starbucks. What Jonathan's doing, though, is he's focusing on the surplus, not just the expense cutting. We can all cut expenses if we want, but where do you really succeed in life is by increasing your income, by increasing your equity. Equity translates into cash flow and multifamily. That's what, if all of us do that, and the fact that Jonathan's wearing, you know, shoes with holes in them, is that going to really excite him during the day? It's not. It's probably going to make him feel worse and he's not going to go after his deals. He's not going to be focusing on doing those cold calls. So you really have to balance out your life. What works best for you? That's really important. And your definition of dumb man, I am probably the dumbest mofo on the planet because I am stubborn. I am tough. So I mean, I don't know if that's the definition, but I would definitely fall in that category because you have to be sometimes. You're saying to yourself, everyone's doing this out there, but we're doing this in the Jake and Gino community. How does that work? I mean, and I think you need to do that. You think you need to step outside of yourself. People see the world as they are, not as it is. That's the true reality. And I think, Jonathan, you mentioned it. I couldn't see myself doing those big deals. That wasn't my reality at the time. And that's why accountability, that's why coaching, that's why being surrounded by other mentors and other people doing it. All of a sudden, your map or the paradigm, as Stephen Covey likes to call it, is just shattered. You're like, these guys are talking about 80 units. I'm doing 3 units here. I mean, that's really, really huge for everybody to hear. And when you think you've got everything solved, you go out and you look out within your, out of yourself and within what's going on, you're like, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on that I could never even imagine of that. So if you guys want to, I mean, add anything to that, because I think that's really, really important. I love the dumb analogy. And I love how you're worried about the surplus. That's really important, guys.
Oh, he definitely was laser focused on taking any money that he would get or profits and just throwing it straight back into the business. So the idea of us living off of surplus, we were just doing our best to make more and more money and live off of what we were making. But all of his investments were poured right back into the business, which I think was he was very disciplined in that way.
That's awesome. You know, I was listening to Zig Ziglar yesterday, everybody. I want you to write this down because this is really important, what Zig said, and it goes to your focus. You don't want to be a wandering generality. You want to be a meaningful specific. And that's really important. You're wandering around. You're not setting goals. You're just going through life and cruising through life and letting life happen to you, where you're going to look back 20 years from now and go, I just let life happen to me. Be a meaningful specific. Write down your goals. Write down the fact that you want to go from $50,000 in equity to $700,000 in equity in 5 years. And then in 2 years, go from 700,000 to 2 million. That doesn't happen by itself. It doesn't happen just out of osmosis or just spontaneous combustion. It happens because you're a meaningful specific. You actually set goals and you put in the work. And, you know, as we're talking through this conversation, I hope everyone's hearing that they're hard workers. It just doesn't come to you because you're thinking about it. You need to have the education times the action, which will ultimately, you know, equal those results. Jonathan, let's jump into that first deal. Because I remember you texting me on that first deal. I remember talking to that first deal. And I was like, dude, this is a home run. What are you waiting for? And that trepidation, that fear, right? But you need to have that accountability. Can we jump into that first deal?
Yeah, for sure. So the first apartment, we actually just closed on it late last year. And how we came across the deal is kind of a testament to the fact that you have to be in the game to score. We got the deal, but it wasn't the way we drew it up. So long story short, we worked with several wholesalers in the past, and we've been doing flipping and single family and small multifamilies with them. And I worked pretty closely with them on scripts and that sort of thing and lead gen. And at the time we were targeting flips in a certain area, and he had just so happened to become adept at asking people, well, do you have any other properties that you would be interested in selling? And so that's how this guy, the guy said, well, yeah, I have this 15 unit apartment in Williamsburg. I'm trying to figure out if I want to renovate it. You know, I got a couple vacancies. And it, like, right off the bat, you could tell this is, you know, you're smelling the blood in the water kind of a deal. This is perfect. You know, he self-manages it. He's in his 50s. He owns a bunch of properties, getting into Airbnbs and like vacation destinations. And this thing's just kind of like the third nipple on him. He wants it cut off. So yeah, I mean, long story short, we got in there, got our hands dirty, did the numbers, realized very quickly that it was a good deal in a lot of disrepair. I mean, the place was trashed, eaten up by termites at 3 or 4 units. Actually, once we got our hands on it, we realized and how much disrepair it was. So I missed on my renovation cost, but it was such a good deal. So the numbers were, it's a 15 unit. We bought it for $965. And as we're turning units, we got 4 units turned. We're averaging around $350 to $400 in increased rent. So at a six cap, it's killer. So we leased up 4 so far, taking rents from like 6 and change to 1,000. And then we actually have 4 more units under renovation. I'm kind of doing it in chunks. I don't want the whole building to be vacant because I don't want to bleed that bad during the fix up. But by the time we're done, we'll probably be all in at about 1.2. And, you know, and this is why I'm so confident about where we're at with our numbers. It'll appraise over 2 million by the time that we're done. So you know, we're gonna refi out, pull a chunk of equity and on to the next one. And we should have this entire reposition done within a year because most of the leases were already month to month. So it's easy. We're just sending notices whenever we're ready for the next units to grab. We just send out notices and get them out and then move into the renovations.
Jonathan, what did you learn from this first deal? Because I'm going to highlight the things that I heard from you. But what were the big learning lessons? I saw that CapEx, hey, under renovation, a lot of us on our very first couple of deals, we don't know how to estimate. It's the rosy glasses. We're maybe pencil whipping the deal. But what did you learn from this first deal?
Well, I'll be honest, I missed the CapEx. So having a really good contractor walk the property with me, I don't really have a system of estimating. So that was a big hole in my game. I had done enough flips just to be dangerous to myself. Like I knew approximately, but I missed. And, you know, I had no way, unless I would have started cutting open drywall, I would have had no way that there was three units just totally termite ridden. So maybe a termite inspection might be a good thing, a really good contractor to walk the property with you. And honestly, here's one that's just kind of moving forward. Boy, once I take this to reposition, it's going to feel really good to have that refi cash out. So what I'm learning is I need to create a conveyor belt. Like I want another cash out coming up a year from now, which means I need to be buying my next deal. And so I'm starting to see like 2, 3, 4 years ahead that I need to be in buy mode now in order to see those big payoffs. Cause that's where you really build momentum at the apartment level. It's not like a single family flip that you can, you know, you find one and you boom, it's listed in 30 days and you're making your money. This takes years, and the bigger it gets, obviously, the longer these turn processes are going to be. So I'm already looking ahead and excited. I'm learning that I need to be finding my next deal like right now.
Which it has been under contract.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So you're talking about the conveyor belt, that idea that Bill Hamm created. We've actually trademarked it. And for everybody, it's really important because think about it. And you're saying long-term, but that deal is going to cash flow for you. We're replacing the cash flow with the equity, but that deal is going to continue to matriculate with cash flow. And if you could put a deal, even one deal a year, everybody, this doesn't have to be thousands of units. You can start out slow, do a 10 unit. Next year, you do a 20 unit. Next year, you do a 30 unit. All of a sudden, you look at year 4, you've got 60 units that are either coming off the conveyor belt, whether they're selling it, or you're actually refining it and getting that equity that Jonathan's talking about. You're pulling that equity out, and that equity all of a sudden becomes cash flow for you. So that's really, really important that you're thinking about momentum. And that first deal may be scary for you. You don't know what you're doing, but I will promise all the listeners, once you have that accountability and you have that team around you, that first deal is done, you're going to make mistakes. There's no doubt about it. You'll make more mistakes if you're doing it on your own. If you have somebody with you, whether it's a community or whether it's a coach or a mentor, there's going to be a lot more less mistakes. The timeline is dramatically shortened. But I think once you do that first deal, you're going to learn a lot and you're going to pivot. And like Jonathan said, he's bringing that person on with him to do that inspection. You may have gotten a little bit of a retrade saying, hey, these termites, they're destroying the property. I may have gotten $50,000 off the price. But in the grand scheme of things, Jonathan, let's say you overpaid by $50,000. Is that okay when you've got $1 million in equity in a deal? There's the trade-off there. It's price versus value. So that's the way we need to look at these things. Don't get caught up in the ego by saying, hey, I lost the $50,000 because I should have gotten it. It's okay. When you're buying right, you're managing right, and you're financing right, you put all three of those together. It is an awesome, awesome deal. Can we talk about this second deal that you're putting on the contract? Where did you find this deal? And is it sort of the same business plan as the first one?
Yeah, it's similar. So this one was on the MLS, believe it or not. I just happened to get information that no one else was aware of, which was the difference in me getting it versus someone else getting it. So first of all, the deal was listed on the residential MLS. So it wasn't on like LoopNet. It wasn't with a broker. It was an apartment listed on the residential MLS, which it still has a commercial aspect to it, but it does not have the normal apartment heavy hitters looking at it every day. So that was kind of like flag number one, that this apartment's not getting the eyeballs on it that it normally would. So called the broker up and we negotiated. He was listed for like $2 million. I happened to be his last offer and all of his offers were coming in around the same price between 1.5 and 1.6. So my offer was actually the straw that broke the camel's back. The seller decided that they were going to pull it off the market, raise the rents, and relist. So my investors, spidey senses, were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, so they're raising the rents. You know, what are you going to want post, you know, once you've raised these rents? And he gave me the number, and it was still below his list price. He's like, they're going to relist at 1.85. So I grab a calculator and do some math. The value after raising these rents was going to be well over what they're at. They didn't realize what kind of value they're adding through this rent increase. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I just ask him, well, why don't we just go to contract? That way you have a buyer lined up. They don't even have to relist it. Let's just go to contract. Once you guys raise these rents and stabilize it, I'll run this by my lender, make sure that we season this new income long enough so that they'll close on the loan and go to contract. And sure enough, they agreed. So in January, they raised the rents. And at this point, we're into February and March's rent roll. The numbers are coming in great. And I hope to have bank approval in the next couple of weeks to close in April.
That is awesome. And what's the exit strategy for this deal? Buy it, hold it, refi it, and cash out?
Actually, we're still going to reposition it. The beautiful thing is it should appraise for more than what we're buying it for. Like, we're going to have some equity moving in. As leases expire, we could still do some internal updates. I think we could take rents from $775 to probably $950 with some kitchen and flooring updates. So the good thing is we're not in a huge hurry. I still want to do it in under 3 years. I partner with a private lender who's bringing some equity to closing. So I'd like to get him paid back within 36 months, but there's not a huge pressure to it. But yeah, I still think there's significant upside in the rents, and we'll probably take these units down maybe two to three at a time over the next 2 to 3 years.
That's awesome. I want you both to answer this question. Where do you see yourselves in 5 years? Do you see yourselves totally out of residential, doing multifamily, working with investors? Do you see yourself back being a minister? I mean, what is the goal for the next 5 years?
Oh, no, you go first.
Okay. I want to be totally mobile. So COVID gave us all the gift that the world is much more virtual than we ever thought it could possibly be. You know, I got some really good friends and mentors that live in Florida. Maybe I could have a place in Florida.
Love that.
Yeah. For me, like total freedom and optionality in life. And for me, life on my terms is doing what I want, where I want, with whom I want, for as long as I want. So that's kind of what I want it to be. It's actually doable with apartment investing. It's like you said, Gino, it doesn't take, you don't have to have $1 million, man. It just takes one or two solid buys a year, you know, and things can escalate really, really quickly. And so, like I mentioned, that hockey stick, we're just now starting to see the beautiful upside where things are getting real fun. But for me, life on my terms, a lot of freedom and option. Our kids are going to be in their 20s. We might have grandkids by then. And in the meantime, I want to be pulling up some other investors. We're already kind of working with a couple guys that want to get into this. So definitely have a desire to give back. I feel like I'm most uniquely qualified at this point to give back in real estate. And I don't see us, you know, necessarily actively engaged in like church leadership, but finding ways to make sure that we're pulling people up alongside of us, people that are willing to put in the work, that are eager to make a difference. Like, it really means a lot to me to make an impact on my grandkids. So if there's other guys out there that could use an arm around their shoulder to kind of pull them along in that vision, like, that's absolutely where I want to be, because I've been so blessed and fortunate to have come across other people that have done that for me. So I would be an a-hole if I didn't send that back down that. To the next generation. What are, yeah. You have any?
Yeah. He's got a coach's heart. We both kind of do. So that having the ability to have an impact on the people around us, because we've been given so much ourselves is absolutely the goal down the road. For me, I'm in resale. Real estate sales. So I'm a full-time real estate agent. Love it. Love helping people buy, sell, and build. And so my goal in 5 years would be, you know, keep standing alongside this big guy right here and have a couple of agents on my team so that, you know, we really can unplug when we want to unplug and that go. Just keep going well, even with if I'm not right there.
That's awesome. Before I ask you the last long answer question, there's a couple of things I want everyone to really take about what Jonathan and Rachel have been talking about, specifically this last couple of deals. There are mom and pop brokers who will list stuff on MLS. So don't think you can't find a deal online. We found our last two deals were actually listed online. Knowing what the valuations are, understanding the values of the properties. He knew that 1.8 was really a great price and he knew the values and he took massive action. And I think understanding that there are a lot of mom and pop sellers out there as well, people who are just motivated, understanding that in real estate, you get a good deal through motivation. You need motivation from the seller's side and understanding that. And if the deal doesn't work out, just being willing to walk away. That's really, really huge. Now, I think Jonathan and Rachel, if you guys could answer this question, this is important because there's a lot of people out there that want to start. They don't know where to start. Oh, I'm sorry. There's one other thing. Please forgive me because this is, I think, the most important. Jonathan said, you don't really need a ton of these deals to make a lifelong impact. Everyone thinks you need thousands of doors. And it really depends upon what your goal and what your vision is. That's why I asked them what their goals are. Before you start the journey, think of where you want to end up. Do you want to have 1,000 units or 2,000 units? Nothing wrong with that. Do you want to have 100 units or 200 units and live the life on your own terms? There's nothing wrong with that as well. Just become clear with what your vision is, and you can accomplish it through a couple of apartment deals with 50 or 60 or 100 units. And then I'll guarantee you, once you've done that, you're like, I can do more of this. This is not that hard. Okay. It's not rocket science. And you know, the definition of Jonathan being dumb, you need to be a little dumb sometimes and to take action, but that's really important. I didn't want to, you know, gloss over that point because that's such a massive point, because it only took myself, between me and Jake, around 300 units to become totally financially free. And that's because I had 6 kids. I lived in New York. I was, you know, investing out of state. So it doesn't take all that much to get, once that rocket ship is off, it only takes a couple of deals. Now, the last question, I'm out there, I'm struggling. I want to get into this real estate business, especially multifamily. What would you both recommend the next steps that people need to do to get into multifamily?
Get a mentor, man. Fortunately, that's the advice, man. Get a mentor. A mentor is a bridge that can help you compress years of time into months, or decades of time into a year or two. And so that's what I'm starting to realize, is the jumps that I've made in the past year are 100% attributable to being around people that have been there, done that, and I can learn from their lessons rather than experience it the hard way. I'm trying to get out of the dumb routine, Gino. I'm like, I'm trying to get away from the dumb and tough. Just be smart and tough. Right?
Well, you know, someone defined wisdom as learning from someone else's mistakes. Being smart is learning from your own mistakes. Having wisdom is learning from someone else's. So maybe you're going to garner a little bit of wisdom.
That's as you go, true. Right? Yeah, 100. Absolutely.
And Rachel, for you, what do you think? I mean, you know, I'm out there. I'm even a woman, or I'm just someone who's stuck. What do I do? These numbers are so daunting. I'm used to doing residential. I'm used to doing single family. I'm comfortable there. But I know after what Jonathan said, I only need a couple of deals, and it only takes a couple of years for me to become successful. What are my next steps?
Be willing to take the jump. Just take that first step that you're so scared to take. I mean, so many times we're looking at a deal and looking at it and saying, should we do it? Should we jump? And the answer is yes. If you're asking yourself, and if there's like a question in your mind, do you have what it takes, and you're surrounding yourself by the right people, the answer is yes. Just do it. And there's no other way than to get in there than to take that first step and take the risk and believe in yourself.
I love, those are wise words, everybody. Read The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Rachel, she's describing resistance. If there's resistance towards something, that means you need to do it. If you don't feel resistance towards doing something, then it's not that important. But if you feel a resistance to become financially free and to become a multifamily entrepreneur and to start impacting and changing lives, and there's resistance towards that, that's a good feeling. It's a bad feeling. And listen, it's never going to go away, because I still feel like throwing up sometimes when we do deals. I still feel uncomfortable with myself. That will never go away. We have to learn how to tame the beast, acknowledge that it's there. It will never go away, but let us use it to fuel us and to get into that next deal or get into that next venture. So I love that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply.
All right, guys, I got some short answer questions for you here. So, all right, both of you, one thing we didn't talk about is obviously you own a brokerage, we hinted at, you also own a CrossFit gym. And being someone who's created success in multiple industries, what would be your best tip for success?
That's really good. For me, it always goes back to why. So, you know, my experience has always been a little bit tough because it's always usually been, I've been doing more than one thing. So for instance, when we were running the CrossFit gym, that was a second business that we were running. Or for instance, guys that get into apartment investing or real estate investing, normally they have a W-2. So you have to be really clear on why you're doing this, because it has to sustain you during the times that it's freaking exhausting and you're stressed out and you start asking yourself, what is the point? Hopefully you have something written down really clearly, or multiple things. Like my entire office is littered with things that have to do with why I'm willing to work so hard and where this is supposed to go. So really, really clear purpose on what it is that you're trying to accomplish and why that is.
Boom. Love it. Rachel, what do you got to add to that?
Oh, I'd say surround yourself with the people that will help you and encourage you to walk through that why. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll feel like you're on an island and you're doing it all on your own. So having the right people surround you is very key.
Love it. Right network, right community. Okay, what about favorite book you've ever read?
That is a good one. Probably The Richest Man in Babylon. It's so philosophical, but so practical. It's probably the best intersection of philosophy and practical implementation I've ever read.
Love that.
Rachel?
Extreme Ownership.
Taco Willing. Love it. I know Jake just read that recently.
Yes. Awesome book. It was an absolute life changer for me in the business world and in my personal world as a mom, as a wife, as a friend. It really just changed my whole paradigm.
Love it. All right, guys. Well, listen, there's been some really good nuggets in this one, and I love the persistence in your story. Gino, give us a wrap up of the show.
They met in Bible college. I'm sure Jonathan, that first year, was doing some smoke signals or something. I don't even know they had cell phones back then. So I don't know if he was able to text or anything, but I'm sure that first year, he probably slipped a few messages in there subliminally. I'm not sure. But they graduate, and he's a minister. He's making 22 G's a year. I mean, that's not going to support your family. There has to be a bigger mission. And he didn't want to live in that at that level of poverty. He had bigger plans. So he decides to get into real estate. Makes 100K his first year there, but then all of a sudden the economy and God has different plans for all of us back in 08, takes a tailspin in that and just, I guess, rededicates himself. And it takes him how many years to get that first $50,000? I said, think 15 years. And then from there puts that 50 grand, thinks he does a home run of a deal, which in his paradigm at that time was, he doubled his equity from 50 to 100. But then the next few years, it goes up to 700 grand in equity. And then he continues to work. And then he joins the community. He finds his first deal, takes that first deal down, has his buy right, has his manage right. And he creates from that equity, he more than 10x that equity. And now he's on his next deal. So it doesn't happen overnight, but being clear and finding an amazing partner, whether it's in the community or whether it's your spouse, that always helps. And having that journey together is really important. We really haven't highlighted as much as we should have. That's what we want to. We want to have a soulmate, a partner that we can share this journey with, because if not, I mean, what is it worth? And we can't just focus on money. We can't just focus on becoming financially free. If you're married out there, bring your spouse along. Let them know. Paint that picture of what financial freedom is. Paint the picture of what, where, why, how. And that's really, really important. So having an amazing family and being able to do that with your family and sharing your goals and becoming crystal clear on why you're doing it. I mean, it's not just to add doors to it, but being able to be mobile and coming down to, Florida, hang out in St. Augustine office for a couple of days. That's a pretty cool thing to be able to do whenever you want to. And having that and knowing why you're doing it, I think, is the most important thing. So I just want to, thank the both of you for being on, for being amazing, I guess, students in the community, and also for being an amazing partnership. And we need more families. We need more spouses talking about how amazing married life is, because that's what it all comes down to for us in the community. One thing that I think separates our brand from everybody else's, I want that one word, I want it to be family. When you hear about Jake and Gino, it's about family, whether it's the family, unit from the family itself or the community itself. So you guys, I think, to me, embody that just as good as anybody else out there.
Jonathan, Rachel, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
That's a good question. Wasn't ready for that one. Probably our website, thatfitteam.com, has all of our contact info. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. There's if they want to get us, there's ways to get us.
Cool. Any final words?
No, just appreciate you guys, man. We're all investors here. And so it's really amazing to see how you guys are sort of making a reverberation. There's a compound effect about the work that you guys are doing. And it's really, really awesome. And we're honored to be a part of it. And I just want you to know that You guys are amazing. I meant to when I said you're some of our favorite people in the world, and you guys are changing families for generations, and it's awesome to witness. So I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Well, let's make it a Movers and Shakers week. See you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.